My name is Mark, and I'm an alcoholic. It is now time for A Newcomer Asks, our new feature for this month. Many of you might have noticed this box in the back of the room. We have this box back there, along with some 3x5 cards and a pen. And the idea is that if you had questions about the program, you could write them on the 3x5 card, along with your name and your initial and where you're from, put it in the box. We'll select at random a question, and with our panel of experts and the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and AA approved literature, we'll be able to answer those questions. So let's see what we got for this week's question. I'll select one at random. This week's question. Hey, at all these AA meetings, I see the basket pass, but also that pink can. And pink is underlined. I get the basket part for coffee and stuff, but what's with the pink can? I do support Victoria's Secret stuff. But what's that got to do with Alcoholics Anonymous? And this was submitted by Benito M. from Tonyville. Benito, are you there? And Benito doesn't want to stand up. Well, that's a good question, Benito. I'm not sure a lot of people were that confused over the pink can. But we're fortunate to have a member of our panel of experts that can explain exactly what that pink can is for. Bill H.
Is it working for you guys? The pink can is used to collect donations that's used to buy literature. And that literature is taken into jails and hospitals and other institutions so that the message of Alcoholics Anonymous can get to those who can't come to our meetings. So, I will mention one other thing about that. The donations to the Pink Asian ICANN have been down a bit in the Northern California area that we are part of. Not according to us. We've made generous contributions, so pat yourself on the back. But across our region, the donations have been down, and that's been causing a reduction in the amount of literature that we're available to take into the jail. So thank you for all of your very generous contributions, and please tell your friends at other meetings to continue to support the Pink Asian ICANN generously. Thank you.
And it is now time for our featured speaker of the evening. Our speaker tonight has been a sober member of our fellowship since 2003. She has been a secretary of numerous meetings in the Fresno area. She has been continuously active in the hospitals and institutions program since 2005 and is currently H&I coordinator. And now, with all the earnestness at your command, will you welcome, please, from Fresno, California, Karen T.
Wow. I don't think I've ever had an introduction like that. I'm impressed. Hi, my name is Karen, and I am a grateful recovered alcoholic. Okay, first of all, I need to thank God for another day clean and another day sober. I don't know about you, but I know it's by His grace that I'm alive, let alone clean and sober. You know, for me, I'm going to start at kind of an early age, at the age of 7, because that's when I ended up, my mother abandoned us, and we ended up in foster homes. And I think that was destined for me to become an alcoholic, because that's where I learned to stuff my feelings, keep my mouth shut, stuff my feelings to survive. You know, and My dad, after 3 years, my dad came and got us, and my dad was in the military, so he was like, it was like yes sir, no sir, and you know, everything had to be just so, and hospital corners on the bed, and you know, all that good stuff, right? And my dad did not know how to show love. There were no hugs and kisses. There was none of that stuff. So I grew up feeling unwanted and unloved. You know, I remember in elementary school and then as I started junior high, my dad was very educated. And, you know, we had to speak correct English in our house. There is no word hate, you know, all that. And no yeah was yes. And so I tried really hard in school. I was a straight-A student. And it was always, this is good, but. This is good, but. And so it's like no matter how hard I tried, no matter what I did, there was always that butt in there. And I look back and I think, you know what? What it really was is I was trying to earn my dad's love. That's what it was. I was trying to earn his love. And the only emotion my dad knew how to show really was anger, and he did that very well. Just by facial expressions, he could put the fear of God into you. You know, while at 12, 13, I discovered alcohol. And then it was like, hey, I like this. You know, I can do this. You know, because then you couldn't hurt me. Then I became somebody else. Then it didn't matter anymore what my dad thought. You know, and so that was the start of my drinking career. And I do say career. I spent 33 years in my disease. And of course, alcohol led to other things. No disrespect to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I'm also a heroin addict. And so, you know, there was always drinking in there, and what happened was it took me to juvenile hall, jail, and 3 prison terms. By the time I made it into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had no hope. I tried so many times to stop on my own. Each time I got out of prison, I swore to be damned, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not doing this anymore. You know, and 2 weeks top, there I am again. You know, and then I'm sitting back in jail, back in prison, going, what the hell happened? You know, I couldn't understand it. And out here, I could never stop. And you know, I finally gave up trying. I truly gave up trying. It just didn't matter. You know, I really thought God's purpose for me. See that woman right there? Don't be like her and you'll be all right. He put me on this earth to be the bad example. And that's really what I thought. You know, so when I got into recovery, it really wasn't about getting into recovery. I was sitting in jail. I had a parole hold on me. I picked up a new case. And I was trying to run out the parole violation in jail so I wouldn't go back to prison. Then I was going to bail out of jail and run, because that's what I do. I run. You know, I've been running all my life. And I got really good at it. You know, I know how to do that. So that's all I was doing, you know. And right before they lifted the parole hold, they brought me into court, and I fired attorneys, became my own attorney, you know, all that. Yeah, to prolong the process, right? And they got tired of playing with me and said, hey, check this out. Plead guilty today. We'll give you 4 years. We'll suspend the 4 years. We'll let you out today. Go get in a program. Now, you know what I heard out of that, right? Freedom today. That's what I heard out of that. Okay? So I'm like, where do I sign? You know, so I get out of jail. Now I gotta go get in the program, right? Well, I'm walking down Tulare Street in Fresno, and there's this little hole in the wall. I think it's a bar. It looks like a bar, okay? It's about noontime. It was called the ODAC Club. Right? and I see it, and there's a lot of cars in the parking lot, and it's noontime, and I thought, hey, you know, I'm going to go check that out. It's pretty, there's a lot of people in there for noon, you know. So I walk in, and there's an AA meeting going on. I was like, really? So I'm thinking, you know, my head's going, look, you're on probation, you're on parole, you got to go in a program, and then probation will kick it over to parole. You can, I know how to do parole. You know, so I'm thinking, just do those little things for probation, right? That's what was in my head. So I ended up hanging out at that place. They were open from like 9 in the morning to 8 at night. I practically lived in there. Not because I thought you guys had anything to offer me. Other than I knew if I stayed in there, I wasn't going to go out and do something stupid. Because everything in me wanted to drink and wanted to use. Everything in me. And I was like, you got to get in the program. So I'm checking out all these programs, and they're like 6 months and a year. And I'm like, no, I'm not willing to do that. I just did 8 months in the county with a bunch of women. Why in the world am I going to go, nah? And so I happened to find the third floor. It was the third floor at the time. And they said, hey, you got 8 months clean and sober. We'll give you a 30-day inpatient. And it was co-ed. I said, I'm there. I can do this. You know, so I get in there, and I'm sitting in all those groups. And I'm really not listening. I don't believe these people. They're liars. If you guys figured out a new way to get over on the system, and you better show me. That's really what I thought it was. You know, but you got to work the first three steps while you're in there, right? Okay. Step one, you admitted we're powerless, right? Our lives are unmanageable. Well, and? You know, and? I mean, really, that's been my entire life. You know, so I was like, okay, you know. And step two is came to believe a power greater than yourself could restore you to sanity. You people must be crazy. I'm not. I'm not insane. I don't walk down the street and talk to street poles or yell at passing cars or chew on bushes. You know? I've seen people do that, right? Well, that's my definition of insanity. So I'm thinking, what the hell are they talking about? I have no clue. But you got to do this writing, right? So I'm doing the writing because I have to, because I want out in 30 days. So, okay, I'll do it, you know. And as I'm doing this writing, actually it was on step three. It said, made the decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understood him. So I start doing this writing. And as I'm doing it, all of a sudden this thought popped in my head. What if? What if these people aren't lying? What if you could really stay clean and sober? And I got that little bit of hope in my life. And I started participating in my own recovery. But I'm hard-headed, I'm stubborn, and I think I'm always right. And I wouldn't have told you that back then. I would have said, I know I'm right. Okay? So everything they told me don't do, the state of a relationship for the first year, wrong. I was in one before I left that program. So I'm going to meetings. They said find a sponsor. I found a sponsor that, well, I found somebody with a lot of time, but I can't really say she was sponsor material because, you know, we went to meetings all over the valley, you know. And, you know, I worked step one, two, and three. Screw you, I'm not doing four. Because I truly believed that if I did step four, I would have to relive all that stuff. And I wasn't willing to relive that because I knew if I had to relive that, I was going to be drunk and I was going to be loaded. I was not going to feel that. Are you kidding? I spent my whole life trying not to feel that stuff. Now you're telling me I got to relive this stuff? You're nuts. You know, so I didn't. So I custom made my program. Well, you know, then I thought, okay, all I need, and I'm good to go now. I'm good to go. All I need is a good man. Well, you know, sick attracts sick, right? Sick attracts sick. I found the sickest man in the room. I married him. Sure did. And ended up following him right back out. I had 33 months. Got off probation. Got off parole. And within 6 months, picked up another number and ended up back in prison one more time. Going, what the hell happened? And it took me a few years to get back in the rooms. You know, I couldn't get that year. I don't know. I couldn't. You know, and the last time that I paroled was 2003. I actually, I'd like to say when I got arrested, that was the last day that I drank or used, but it wasn't. My sobriety date is, instead of being November 23rd, of 2002, it's January 17th of 2003 because I was drinking Pruno in prison. That's some lovely stuff. So, you know, I'm sitting there, I'm going, my head's going, you gotta get a clean date and keep it. You gotta get a clean date and keep it, you know? So, the last time I paroled, I went into a program. And I decided that, you know, I'm done. Whatever these people tell me I need to do in here, I'm going to do. I don't care what it is, I'm going to do it. You know, I just didn't want to live like that anymore. And having had a little bit of time, I knew it was possible. I'm going to tell you, if you think about relapsing, think about going back out there, it ain't nothing nice. And I'm not just talking about the going back out. I'm talking about when you got a head full of program and a body full of alcohol and drugs, you are so screwed. Oh, my God. Because this does not shut up. It does not. You can't get loaded enough. You can't get drunk enough. My head's going, and you don't got to work, and you don't got to live like this, and you don't got to live like this, and you don't got to, I'm like, shut up, you know? But, you know, for me, you know, I don't stop until I'm stopped. I'm not, you know, really. I have to be locked up. Once I start, I do not stop. I break out in handcuffs. If I drink or use, that's my allergic reaction. Because I do stupid stuff. It's on and cracking, and I don't care. You know? And so, you know, I went into this program and I decided I did my little inpatient thing through parole, all paid for. And I started going to my meetings and I got the sponsor and I went through all of the steps. But you know what, it took me, I had 4 years before I did my four step. I had 4 years. I don't suggest that because I kept myself sick. I did. I kept myself sick. And it wasn't because of it wasn't so much because of the four step, but it was, you know what I had, the biggest thing that I had a problem with was just forgiving myself. Because, you know, I did the same thing to my kids that was done to me. I abandoned my kids. I have a son and a daughter, and their dads raised them. I did the same thing, and I just couldn't forgive myself. I couldn't, you know? And one day, I'm working on my fourth step, and I was talking with another member, a friend of mine, and I was telling him, you know, check this out, Joe. This isn't the issue. I don't care about this. I'll tell my four step to anybody. I just don't care. It just doesn't matter anymore. You know, it really doesn't. Whatever ugly I did, if you want to know, ask. I'll tell you. Because that's not who I am today. But, you know, he looked at me and I said, I'm like, and people would tell me, well, God forgives you. Who are you not to forgive yourself? You know, and I'm like, you know what? Stuff has to make sense for me. You know, and this guy says, Karen, he said, you know what? When you were traumatized at 7 years old and went into those foster homes, your thinking got twisted. So how in the world were you going to be able to make right decisions or choices? How were you going to be able to do that? Now see, that made sense to me. And that was the start of Happy, Joyous, and Free, baby. That really was it for me, because it's like that was that one thing that just ate at me and ate at me and ate at me, and I just didn't know how to forgive myself, you know. But he said something that made sense to me, and so then I was able to move on. You know, today, this is pretty ironic too. You know, I've been involved in H&I since 2 years to go into prison or wherever, you know, and in the so as soon as I had my 2 years, I got on H&I panels, and last year I was able to go into the prison, the women's prison, and that was like really surreal, because it was the prison that I, VSPW, that I paroled from last, I went with this girl that had never been to prison, and she looks at me, and we're in the front of the prison, right? And she's like, is this how we go in? And I'm looking at her like, I got no clue. I ain't never seen the front of this place. They bring me around the back on the bus, handcuffed and shackled. I don't know. You know? She's like, oh, okay. You know? We get through there, and you have to walk out a building, and you see the main yard right there. And then you walk back in, and I walked through that door, and I just started crying. I just tears were streaming down my face, and I'm just like, oh, my God, thank you, this isn't me anymore. Thank you, God, this isn't me anymore. Today, I work at the program that I went through. I'm a case manager over there. It's a program for parolee women, and they can have 2 children there. And this is really weird, too, because it was never my intent to work in recovery. In fact, I swore to be damned I wasn't. Look at, I sponsor women. I do H&I. I do it for fun and for free. That's what I've always told everybody. But I pray for God's will. And 2 years ago, he got me through the back door. He did. It was funny because I was on workman's comp. Then I got on unemployment, and after this claim got settled, and I couldn't do what I used to do, and that's when they were talking about sending IOUs out. The state was going to send out IOUs, and we, like, went in a panic. We went, oh, my God, better get a job. I was in an H&I business meeting, and the program manager came up and said, hey, Ann said to go turn in your resume over there. They need a night monitor. So I'm thinking, oh, what the hell, you know, it'll pay my bills, you know. And I've been there ever since, and I went from night monitor to career developer, and now I'm a case manager. Part of my job is to go into the prisons, CIW, CCWF, BSPW, and talk to the women about changing their lives and coming into the program. I actually have, I'm still like going, really, God? I actually have a state ID that says California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation with my picture and my name, and I can just walk in, and I get to walk out. Damn, I get to walk out. I'm just like, that still blows my mind. I have 8.5 years. That still blows my mind. You know, I spent 33 years out there, so I am every day in awe of my life. I'm just like, wow. I can't say enough about Alcoholics Anonymous. I truly cannot. Because, you know what, not only did it save my life, it gave me a new life. I am not the woman that first walked through the doors. You know, you guys probably wouldn't have liked me very much when I first got here. And I couldn't believe the people kept telling me, keep coming back. Because, you know, I was was a ranting, raving lunatic. I'm not lying. Whatever I was feeling, you knew. Everybody knew. You know, if I was pissed off, you knew it. If I was irritated, you knew it. You know? And now I don't have those feelings. I have bad moments. I don't have bad days. You know, because you can start your day over again anytime you choose. You know, I've got an amazing God in my life. That's the biggest blessing that I got out of this program, is I have a God in my life that gives me the strength and courage to stick around here and do the things I need to do. Because I'm telling you, I got rabbit in me. You know, I run. I don't want to face responsibilities. I don't want to deal with stuff. You know, but because I have this God in my life, He gives me the strength and courage to do the things that I need to do. You know, without Him, I would be screwed. Totally. I know this. You know, every time I come into a meeting, I pray. If I'm called upon, I pray. If I'm called upon, speak through me, Lord. Because you know what? It can't be me. It cannot be me. Anything good that comes out of me is because I have a God in my life. You know? So that's my biggest message. I encourage you to find that power greater than yourself. Because baby, you're going to need them. You are going to need them. You know, I have been through a lot in my recovery. I had to I raised my grandkids for a year and a half while my daughter was out there running amok. I had to call the police on her twice. I had 2 years in. I had to give my grandkids to their aunt and move on my daughter. And you know what? I shared about it in my home group because I go in the door. I'm in the old place. I got to move. I need to pack. And every time I walked through the door, the house was empty, and I would just be paralyzed, and I would sit on the couch, and I would cry. And that's all I could do. And so I shared about it. You know, my home group, man, those people were there. They came over. They helped me pack. They helped me move. They helped me clean up the old place. They came constantly and surrounded me with their love, with their strength. You know what? And I've never received unconditional love like that ever in my life, ever from anybody in my life. And that's what you people did for me. You gave me unconditional love. You taught me how to be a friend, how to be a mother, how to be a grandmother. I didn't know how to do any of those things. I learned it here from you people. I am truly, truly grateful to this program, man. It is a we program. It's a we program. We don't have to do anything alone unless we choose to. If you choose not to reach out and ask for help. Because I guarantee you reach out and ask for help, somebody's hand's going to be there. I guarantee it. I don't care what meeting you're from. Somebody in the rooms is going to reach out their hand and say, you know what, I think I might have a solution for you, whatever it is you're going through. That's what I've learned. You know, I've been in meetings up and down California, and when I walk through the door, I know I'm home. I was really nervous about this meeting, coming over here and speaking and, you know, all that good stuff. Oh, my God. This intimidates me, the podium, the freaking microphone. Hey, and I've done good because I'm a trust. Usually there's some F words that fly out. But you know what? Once I get started and I realize, you know what? You're my family. Why should I be nervous? You know, people ask me why I go into the prison. Why do I do what I do? I know people that have come out and got clean and sober and said, I don't ever want to go back there. You know what, though? They're my people. They're my people just like you're my people. How can I not go back? How can I not share a message of hope? How can I not tell a man, you don't got to live like that? You do not have to live like that. I found a solution, and it'll work for you, too. How could I not do that? So I love my job. I love my job. It's amazing to me. These rooms are amazing to me. I get better therapy here than if I went to a therapist and paid for it. Shoot. Really? That is the truth. Because you guys know where I'm coming from. You know, you don't look at me all weird going, all right. You know, when I'm having some weird thing going on, some crisis or whatever, I can open my mouth and talk about it, and you don't go, oh. You know? Yeah, you know, I kind of experienced that. Or, you know, so-and-so just went through something like that. You know? And that's what we do around here. And I've gotten the most help. And believe me, I've seen psychiatrists and psychologists and therapists and counselors and, you know. And I found my sanity here. Imagine that. Imagine that. For people with no degrees, degree in life, I think that's the most beneficial. Because we all have been through what we've been through. And we can understand that. Anyway, so if you're new around here, man, I really want to encourage you to stick around and give yourself a break. This is free. It's free. And there's a whole lot of people that are willing to help. All you got to do is become willing. Just willing to do the next indicated thing. I know it sounds like it's all difficult and, you know, but it's really not. It's a simple, simple program designed for complicated people. All you gotta do, man, is just reach out and say, you know what, I need to do something different in my life. Well, I did want to finish the story about my daughter because, you know what, when I did that, my daughter called me one day, and she says, come get me, Mom. And I'm like, what for? People kept telling me, let go, let God, let go, let God. Well, I put myself through a year in hell because I couldn't let go and let God. You know, so I'm like, what for? And she's like, I love you. I miss you. I want to see you. And I was like, no. No, you want to come home. You want to shower. You want to change. You want to eat. You want to rest. And then you're going to go back out. No. And then I freaked out. And then I cried. I cry a lot. And thank God I can cry. And I'm every time they found a dead woman, I'm going, oh, my God, what's her description? You know, what she look like? How old was she? And, you know, all this stuff. And I had, you know, I read the other big book. And it says that my family's justified through me. And you have to walk in faith and claim it. So I started doing that. Every time somebody asked me about my daughter, I'd say, my God's doing for my daughter what he's done for me. I didn't believe it, but I kept saying it, and I kept saying it, and I kept saying it, and I came to believe it. And then I got to a point where I knew. I knew. I don't worry about any of my family members anymore because I know my God's taking care of them. About 4 months after that, my daughter ended up in recovery. She's been on the same job for 2.5 years now, have all 4 of my little grandbabies. That's my God at work, people. That is my God at work. And you know what? I found him here. I found him here. I found him through the steps and the spiritual principles that are in the steps. Don't just do the steps. Apply them in your life. Because that's where they're going to make a difference. You know, you can have a lot of knowledge up here. We can do the steps, we can do the steps, do the writing, do that stuff. But all the knowledge in the world up here, if you don't learn to apply it in your life, what good is it? It's useless, right? So learn to apply the steps in your life. And your life becomes so much simpler. I'm about out of time. I want to thank you very much for listening to me. I do want to encourage the newcomers, man. You know what? There's a solution. It's in these rooms. It's in the big book. It's in the first 164 pages of the big book. Get a sponsor and take the steps, man. You deserve it. You deserve a good life. Each and every one of us does. That's what our God wants for us. Do a little bit of footwork and you get a lot of results. Thank you.